to go.
Well, I'm very excited to be a part of this series, The Sounds of Summer. If you were not here last weekend, our lead pastor, Ben Snyder, kicked us off, and we sang the song Summertime, and he talked about how it is blessed to rest. And today, we're going to do a little bit of a different song, because I'm in charge this weekend, so I got to pick the song. Not that I didn't like Summertime, but today is definitely going to be better. So here's some trivia for our song. The first fact is that this song was released in 2006. So take yourself back to 2006. What were you doing? Where were you? What did you listen to a lot? And what did you hear on the radio a lot? That will help you to guess the song. The next fact is that this song was inspired by the artist's son. That's right, it has something to do, kind of. It has a Father's Day type feel to it. Any guesses? Great. Okay, next one. It was nominated for the ACM, Academy of Country Music. Some of you are bummed. Song of the Year and Video of the Year in 2008. Does anybody think they know what song we're singing today? It's not Brad Paisley. It's not a Brad Paisley song. Good guess. No, instead, it's actually Watching You by Rodney Atkins. Now, yes, we have some fans. That's pretty good. Okay. Some people are like, no, I don't even know what that is, and I don't want to know what it is. That's okay. I think you're going to enjoy this as we listen to Nate and the Manuals.
Through town, just my boy and me, with a happy meal in his booster seat, knowing that he couldn't have the toy till his nuggets were gone. A green traffic light turned straight to red. I hit my brakes and muddled under my breath. His fries went flying and his own drink covered his lap. But then my four-year-old said a four-letter word. It started with an S, and I was concerned. So I said, son, now where'd you learn to talk like that? He said, I've been watching you, Dad, ain't that cool? I'm your buckaroo, I wanna be like you. Eat all my food, and grow as tall as you are. And this side of bedtime later than night, turning off my son's Scooby-Doo night light. He crawled out of bed and he got down on his knees. He closed his little eyes, folded his little hands, spoke to God like he was talking to a friend. And I said, son, now where'd you learn to pray like? Everything you do.
Happy Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to me. I will say this, if I never accomplish anything else in this life but having Nate sing the word buckaroo from this stage, I'll consider my life a success. Some of you tuned out, though, when you heard it was going to be a country song, so I'll give you a little bit of a recap of what happened in the song and how I identify it, why I like the song. You see that in the song, the little boy, four-year-old, says a bad word, and I stop there, and we'll just say this. We'll address this right now, get the elephant. You know, we're going to identify the elephant in the room. Parents, if your kid is using foul language, like your son, your daughter, whatever, they're using bad words, you know why they're saying those bad words. The song points it out kind of. Like, you know where they're getting it from, right? We can be honest, it's church. They're getting it from their grandparents. Obviously, right? No, I'm just kidding. I will say this, though. I will say that as I listen to the song, I know one thing my sons or my daughter will never say. Something my son or daughter, they'll never say this. They will never say, "Dad, when I grow up, I want to be as tall as you are." I hope they have much bigger dreams than that. You know. Anyway, I do love the song. The song talks about a relationship between a father and his son and how the dad is realizing he's kind of coming to terms with the fact that he has an influence over his son, that his son is watching him all the time and doing the things that he's doing. His son is modeling the things that his dad does. So if his dad is going to use a word, he's going to use that word. And what's great about the song is it's kind of based on a true story. You see, Rodney Atkins, who wrote and sang the song, a song that came out before that he had written was called If You're Going Through Hell, and he talks about, you probably know the song, I'm not going to sing it right now, I kind of want to, but we don't have the time. If you're going through hell. Okay, that's it. You see my little country twang? Anyway, it doesn't matter. No other service got to hear that. I shouldn't do that again. Okay. Anyway, so he did that song, and then the son is singing it at his school, like over and over again, and then the teacher had to call home and be like, hey, you know, your son, he's using language, I know it's your song and everything, and so Rodney had to have a conversation with his son, and in that moment, he's kind of realizing, like, wow, he's watching me a lot more than I thought he was, and that's the inspiration for the song. What's interesting about the song, and where we're going with it today, is that you see the son really loves, he values his dad. He wants to be just like his dad. So he models the behavior he sees his dad modeling. Like, he does the stuff that his dad does, and it's good in some senses. Like, he sees him praying, so he prays, and that kind of brings some, like, it makes you feel really good. And then, you know, the other stuff as well. And so that kind of leads to, like, what we're going to talk about today. Like, the bottom line for today is that we model what we value. We model what we value. Things that we value, we act out those values. So whether it is the stuff that we value, if we value being financially wise, then we'll model that by not getting into more debt or spending correctly or not spending as much as we were. If we value physical fitness, we'll model that and we'll act that out by working out, eating right, all that kind of stuff. If we value our relationship with our parents, we'll spend more time with them. If we value our relationship with our friends, we'll spend more time, we'll treat them the way that we want to be treated. We model what we value. And it didn't just get that from the song, right? Like, the song is great. I love the song. Maybe some of you don't, but the song is great. It kind of teaches an important principle. It shows us that we model what we value. But really, we get it from a story in the New Testament. Where we see this bottom line kind of come to the surface is in a story in the New Testament. One of my favorite stories in the New Testament. And you've probably heard of this story. If you haven't heard of it, I'd be surprised. It's the story of the prodigal son. Whether or not you've read the story, you've probably heard of it before. And what's interesting about the story of the prodigal son is a couple things. First, many of us that have read it probably several times have missed the whole point. Like, we may have read the story, but we focus on one aspect of the story, neglecting an entire portion of it. In fact, the main point of the story. And so my hope today is that we get to see the main point. We get to see that we model what we value, and there's something deeper there too, because you read the story, and it can talk about, like, our relationships here on earth, like the relationships we have with our parents or our kids or our cousins or our friends or romantic relationships. It talks about the ways in which we ought to treat people. It does. But it's not really the whole point of it. There's something deeper. There's something more profound than just that, though that's very helpful. My hope for today is we can see both sides of that. It will affect the way that we live, and that over the next few months during this summer season that we'll take advantage of the time that we have with people, we'll model what we value. And I think as we look at this story, what you'll do, I hope, my invitation to you is to lean in and to try to identify with, try and figure out where you find yourself in the story. I think when you do that, when you try to identify with, when you try to find yourself in the story, God can speak in a pretty profound way. And so we're going to jump into the story in Luke chapter 15, verse 11. It says, to illustrate the point further. Now, when you see something like that in the Bible, therefore, to illustrate the point further, if it's referring back to something, you just got to rewind. Go back to what it's referring to. It's just a simple Bible study technique. So we're going to go back to the beginning of the chapter. It says, tax collectors and other notorious sinners often came to listen to Jesus teach. This made the Pharisees and teachers of religious law complain that he was associating with such sinful people, even eating with them. So you see, Jesus is about to tell this story, and he's got two groups of people. He's got super religious people over here, religious elites, and then he's got this other side over here, the tax collectors and the notorious sinners. And if we're not careful, we won't really understand who the tax collectors were. Because honestly, the Pharisees and the religious leaders in the Gospels, in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they are, in a sense, they show up as the bad guys a lot of the time. But for me, as you read about tax collectors, you can kind of understand why they didn't like these people. Here's why. The tax collectors weren't what we would associate with like the IRS today. It's not the same thing. Instead, you have to understand what was going on in the first century. So Rome, the most powerful force, violent, wicked, conquering everybody, enslaving them, raping, murdering. They were terrible. They were evil, terrible. They had conquered the Jewish peoples. And what they would do is they had to keep people in check, keep the nations in check. The people that they had conquered had to be controlled, and they did that through the military. And the way to keep the military big and strong and powerful was to fund it through taxes. And so they would charge a ridiculous amount of money for the local people to fund the military. So just imagine you're a first century person, a first century Jewish person, this occupying force that's just wicked and evil, killing your brothers and sisters. You've lost several family members to this force. People are enslaved because of them. They're occupiers. They're evil. And then your neighbor or your brother or your father or your friend decides he's going to collect taxes from you on their behalf. That would make things a little difficult. You would have some feelings for that person. But it's not even that bad, because oftentimes these tax collectors would collect more than what they were supposed to and line their pockets with the extra so that they could become wealthy, they could become rich, off the backs, off the suffering of their friends. And so what can happen sometimes, we can gloss over that word tax collectors. The reason why that people did not like them was because they were collecting taxes and more than they were supposed to and benefiting and getting wealthy off the suffering of their people. So I can understand why the Pharisees, the religious leaders, the people of the time would despise the tax collectors. I can get it. And so you have this. Jesus is teaching both groups of people. He's got them there. He knows there's some tension. So he starts to begin to tell stories. He tells one story about a shepherd who has 100 sheep, and one of the sheep, it leaves. And so the shepherd in the story goes after the sheep, gets the sheep, brings the sheep back into the fold. And the point of the story was that the shepherd left the 99 to go get the one. And there's a division in this story. You have the 99 would be the religious people. The one would be the tax collector, notorious sinner type. Then he tells another story. He says that there's a woman who loses a coin. She goes and gets a coin. Same type of principle. Celebrates. There's a coin. I got my lost coin. It's great. But he has to go a little bit further. And that's what Luke tells us, is that he's going to illustrate the point further. So Jesus tells them this story. This is the story of the prodigal son. This is the kind of story that would get Jesus killed. This story is the kind of story that would upset the religious authorities so much that they wanted him dead. This is a profound but also very controversial story. Here's the story. A man had two sons. The younger son told his father, "I want my share of your estate now before you die." So back then, the fathers would give up an inheritance to their sons. And typically, if there's two sons, the older son would get 2/3 of it. The younger son would get 1/3 of it. The younger son wants his share now. In fact, when you study this passage, you'll see that it's essentially like him telling his dad, "I wish you were dead. I would rather that you were dead so I could have my money. So will you just give me my money?" Now, I thought about this, trying to figure out, where do I situate in the story? You see, in a sense, the younger son, what he values. What does the younger son value? He values what his dad can give him. He values the money. And he wants that money. So he asked for it. And I sit there thinking, okay, so what if I talked to my dad that way? My dad is a Marine and just retired police officer. Sets the stage for you. Let's just say that I walked up to my dad. You're giggling already. I walk up to my dad and I say, "Hey, Dad, kind of wish that you weren't around anymore so I could just have my inheritance." I don't think I'm getting an inheritance, by the way. It's just, you know, but let's just keep it for the story. I know my dad, and he would react one of two ways. First one, he would say, "Thank you for being honest. Appreciate it. I'm going to cut you out of the will now, so we don't have to worry about it at all." Right? That'd be number one. But the more likely scenario, dads, lean in here, because this is you. The more likely scenario is, "Oh, that's great. Thanks for being honest. Let's go talk about this outside, Andy." That's how it go. And I would immediately backtrack and be like, "Okay, I'm sorry. That was dumb. Bad day." Right? That's how I would assume my dad would react. But that's not how the father reacts. It's not how the father reacts. So his father agreed to divide his wealth between his sons. He just does it. We don't see completely yet, but this is the introduction of what the father values. We'll see even more of what the younger son values here. A few days later, this younger son packed all his belongings and moved to a distant land, outside of the authority, outside of the care, away from, separated from his father. He's in a distant land. And there, he wasted all his money in wild living. What was the wild living? You can fill in the blanks. But essentially, it was stuff that would have brought shame and dishonor toward his father. That's what it would have done in that day and age. So this is the younger, you see what the younger son values. The younger son, his value, his path is, I'm going to try to do everything I can to be as far away from my dad and do all the stuff he told me I wasn't supposed to do. Do all the stuff that he warned me about. I'm going to do that. Total independence, total freedom. I'm going to do what I want when I want. He's going to model what he values. So he goes and does it. And of course, like it's, I mean, you can just guess what happens to him. About the time his money ran out, he's now broke. He lost all the inheritance. He fractured his relationship with his father, and the reason he fractured his relationship with his father was the money. That's now gone. A great famine swept over the land, so now there's no food, and nobody's going to be able to give him food because there's no food to give, and he began to starve. He persuaded a local farmer to hire him, and the man sent him into his fields to feed the pigs. This was a big deal. Jesus was a brilliant storyteller. There's nothing in here that's an accident in his story. The reason why the pigs would be an issue is because for Jewish people, they are unclean animals. He would have learned this from his dad, that you're not supposed to be around pigs, associate with them, or work with. You can't touch them. It makes you unclean. But he's desperate, and he's already fractured that relationship. He's already done all the other stuff that's going to make him separate from his dad, so why not? So he gets a job to feed the pigs. But the young man became so hungry that even the pods he was feeding the pigs looked good to him. So now he's thinking about eating what the pigs were eating. So not only is he associating with, touching, being around pigs, but he's going to eat their food. He's going to eat like a pig does. He's hitting rock bottom. Like he's at the base level of his existence. But he wants to eat, but nobody, because it's a famine, would give him anything. So some of you today, I'm not saying you're in the exact situation of the younger son, but some of you today, you've been there, where the path that you wanted to take was the path of total independence, total freedom. Nobody's going to tell me. I know. I'm going to do what I want, when I want it. And you end up in a spot like the younger son where you feel like you've hit rock bottom. There's nowhere else for you to go. And so in that moment, what can you do? What can you do? Well, the younger brother, it says, when he finally came to his senses, and I love the way some other translations say this, they say that when he finally came to himself, like when he finally came to terms with what he had done to himself, when all he had left was him and his choices, when he came to his senses, when he came to himself, he said to himself, at home, even the hired servants have food enough to spare, and here I am dying of hunger. So now he's seeing the results of his decisions, starving, dirty, totally ashamed, and he's remembering what he had when he lived at home. So he makes a plan. He says, I will go home to my father and say, we're gonna stop there. Have you ever put yourself in a position where you know you've been caught or you're gonna be in trouble, and so you gotta have an explanation for it, and so you start writing your story in your head? Anybody have that? Just me? Okay. Maybe it's just me. Well, I think probably you can relate, but we'll see. So when I was a teenage boy, I was not a good driver. Surprise. Teenage boys, you probably don't know this yet, but you're not good at driving. You're just not. None of the data support it. You might sit here and say, he's wrong. I'm a very good driver. You're not. You'll look back on it and you'll say, I wasn't. I know that for me, I was a really bad driver. And so there was one time, there's plenty of stories. We don't have time for all of them. But there was one time in particular where I'm in the driveway at my dad's house. He has a narrow driveway. He had at the time a chain link fence, and then he had concrete stairs and then the house. And so I have to back the car out, which is, you know, you should be able to do this. I had a license. So I'm backing the car out, not paying attention because I'm 17 or 18, whatever I was. I'm backing the car out, and I realize when I start to pay attention that I'm kind of going toward the fence. And so what do you do when you're going toward the fence? You start to turn the wheel a little bit so that it shifts back this way. And then I realize I'm not going to miss the fence, so I got to hit the brakes. And so I hit the brakes as hard as I possibly could. The thing was, is my foot was not on the brake. I hit the gas and I hit it hard and I went this way toward the house and I smoked the steps. My car did one of those like this, like in the movies, you know, it went up on its side a little bit. Both my tires are flat. It was like boom, boom, and I landed. And I sat there and I'm like, my dad's in the house. He heard that. He for sure heard that. He's coming out here. I'm dead. And so what did I decide to do? Make up a story. Because, you know, I could just tell the truth. It would have been really easy to tell the truth. I didn't. So I was like, okay, what can I do? And what do you do in those? It can't be your fault. So I found somebody else to blame. I blamed an animal. I said, Dad came out. He's like, Andy, what happened? Are you okay? I'm like, I'm fine. Dad, oh my gosh. It was crazy. I was backing out, paying attention, doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. And this animal came out of nowhere. And it was on the side by the fence. I didn't want to hit it. And so I kind of moved. And it was a whole thing. It happened so fast. I mean, the animal lived, thank God. He's just staring at me. Just like this. My dad's a cop. He gets lied to all the time. So he's just staring at me like this. And I'm like, I hope he believes me. I know he didn't believe me. And he's just staring at me and he goes, what kind of animal was it? I'm gonna be honest, I did not anticipate that question. So I just looked at him, I was like, I don't know. It could have been black or brown. It was so fast, but it's alive. That's the point. You're never gonna find it. It ran away, Dad. So you can't ask that. And he just, you know, he knew I was lying. So today, Dad, if you're watching, I lied to you 20 years ago or about that time. There was no animal. I was just being stupid. And I did have to get my tires replaced. But you've been there, right? You've told stories before. And then I talked to somebody in the lobby just after the last service here at Perrysburg, and she was telling me, yeah, my mom was a corrections officer, and she knew every single time I was lying. I think it's something parents have. You know when your kids are lying. But this son, he's now realizing he's going to go back to his dad and ask to come back into to be a hired servant. And so he's crafting up what he's going to say to his dad. He's got to go home. He's starving. So he's writing his story in his head. What is his story? Let's look at his story. It says, Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you. So kind of a good start. He's admitting that he did wrong. He's admitting that what he did was wrong. And I am no longer worthy of being called your son. That's pretty big. I know that you won't take me back into the family. I know that I've done so much that I'm not worthy to be your son anymore. But please take me on as a hired servant. So that's his speech. I did wrong. I know that I have earned nothing. In fact, I've lost all of it. But if I could just work for you again, I would do that. That's his speech. So Jesus continues, he returned home to his father. And while he was still a long way off, his father saw him coming. That to me is fascinating. Is the dad waiting? I mean, if you're a parent and you've had a wayward child, I mean, maybe you're not looking off onto the horizon, but you're waiting for that kid to return. You're waiting for the person who, maybe it's not a parent, maybe it's a friend, a relationship, somebody you knew in the past that had done something so terrible, and you're just waiting for them to come to terms with what they've done, or you're waiting for them to return to you. The father is, in some sense, he's watching, waiting for his son, and he saw him coming and filled with love and compassion. It's easy to read right past that. The father, who had probably heard all of these people talk about his son, the father who had heard the people in the town saying, can you believe what so-and-so did? Can you believe what Otto's son did? Can you believe, and Otto's my dad's name, so just did that. Can you believe what, and you just fill in the blank, that same father, when he sees his son coming back, mind you, the son had been hanging out with pigs, feeding pigs, doing all this disgusting stuff, despicable stuff that would have brought a lot of shame and dishonor toward his dad. Told his dad, I wish you were dead so I could have your money. That son is coming back, and the father's filled with love and compassion. So what does he do? He ran to his son, which at the time would have been undignified. Men of high status would not have ran back then, and he did. He disregarded that. He ran to his son. He embraced him, even in the filth. He embraced him and kissed him. So we can stop there. What if the son valued his freedom, if the son valued his comfort, if the son valued his pleasure, if the son was selfishly seeking all the things that would make him happy, regardless of how it would make everybody else feel, if that was the path that the son took, what does the father value? He values his son. Not a cleaned up son. Not a son who didn't do the things that he did, but he values his son despite the things that he did, despite the mess that he's bringing home with him. The father values his son, and he's about to model it. His son starts the speech, so now he's getting into it. He's probably practiced it hundreds of times as he's walking back to his dad's house. He says, Father, I've sinned against both heaven and you, and I am no longer worthy of being called your son. And it's at that moment the father decides to interrupt him, because I'm sure that that evoked all kinds of emotion. So the father interrupts and says to the servants, quick, bring the finest robe in the house and put it on him. Get a ring for his finger and sandals for his feet, and kill the calf we've been fattening. We must celebrate with a feast. For this son of mine was dead and has now returned to life. He was lost, but now he is found. And so the party began. The father valued his son. He valued his son. And so when his son returned, shame, guilt, all that baggage, all the filth with him, the father did, he saw past all of that and saw his son, welcomed him home. He gave him a robe. He gave him the signet ring, the ring that would have designated his authority under his father. And he gives it all to him and then starts to throw a party. So today, if you identify with, I ask you to identify with somebody in the story, if you identify with the younger son, like you've made some bad decisions that have fractured relationships in your life. Today, maybe what you need to hear is that maybe you just need to return. You can't control how people are going to react when you do, but maybe today is a day where you decide, you know what, I'm going to return. I'm going to go back to that person. I'm going to admit that I was wrong. I'm going to ask for them to take me back in. And I don't know how they're going to respond. We hope and we pray that they'll respond the way the father does in the story. Maybe today you are a parent, or you are somebody who has somebody in your life that has fractured that relationship, that has done things that has caused a fracture like that. And maybe today you need to look at the father and be like, okay, so maybe that's how I need to respond if that person chooses to return. Now, what's interesting about the prodigal son story, even the title of it, what's interesting is that the focus of the story seems to be the younger brother, the younger son. But it's not. That's the first half of the story. The focus is somewhere different. Here's the focus. Meanwhile, the older son was in the fields working, doing what he was supposed to be doing, doing what the dad had asked him to do. When he returned home, meaning he was not at home, he was somewhere different, he heard music and dancing. Now, as an aside, I did not party a bunch in high school or college or anything like that, but I know this. If you can hear dancing, it's a freaking great party. If you can hear the dancing, it's either really bad dancing, which is still fun, or it's awesome and it's loud and it's crazy. So this is a banger. This is a massive party. It's awesome, and he can hear it. So he's getting interested, like, what's going on? So he asked one of the servants what was going on. The servant says, your brother's back, and your father has killed the fattened calf. We are celebrating because of his safe return. Put yourself in the shoes of the older brother for just a minute. You're doing everything your dad asked you to do all the time. You are basically perfect in that sense. You're doing what he asked you to do. You're working in the fields. And your younger brother, just a few years ago, however long ago it was, tells your dad he wishes he was dead. How disrespectful. All he cared about was the money. He left. And now you're hearing all these stories about what he's doing. And he comes back covered in filth. He is disgusting. He is disrespectful. He is not worthy of being called a son. And he comes back, and what does dad do? What should dad do according to the older brother? Dad should say, do you know what you've done? Do you know how you made me feel, how you made our family look? You don't get to come back here. I'm not hiring you. That's how the older brother felt. That's how the older brother felt. And I know that for me, if I could be honest with you for a second, I understand that. The same way I understand the perspective of the younger brother, I can understand the perspective of the older brother. You've probably had people in your life that resemble the younger brother. And you've probably, if you're honest, had the same posture and feelings of the older brother because you're human. Jesus is addressing both groups, the younger brother being the tax collector, done a bunch of stuff, despicable stuff, brought shame on the people, tax collector, notorious sinner. And now he's addressing the other group, the self-righteous religious types. That's who he's addressing now. So the older brother finds out there's a party going on, and what's his response? The older brother was angry. He's angry. I can understand that. And he wouldn't go into the party. His father came out. So just like the father ran to the younger son, the father goes to the older son. And what does he do? He begs him. Not something a man of his stature would do, but he does it. He disregards that. He says, he begs him to come into the party. Come, your brother, he's back. Like, he's not dead. We thought he was dead. He's not dead. He's back. He's here. We're going to celebrate. Older brother says this, all these years I've slaved for you and never once refused to do a single thing you told me to. Never. And in all that time, you never gave me even one young goat for a feast with my friends. Yet, When this son of yours, not my brother, there is no name, he is your son. When this son of yours comes back after squandering your money on prostitutes, you celebrate by killing the fattened calf. Can you relate? I can relate. We never fattened a calf growing up, but we had some parties and stuff like that. I can relate to the older brother. This isn't fair. Look at all the things. You're going to give him this? You never gave me that. I've been here the whole time. I didn't do anything wrong. Why is he getting all the attention? This is the older brother's posture, and it's totally understandable in a sense. But in this, in the older brother's posture, we see what he values. We see what if the younger brother values his freedom, his ability to do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, and we see that the father values his son, we see in the older brother, he doesn't value his father, he values what his father could give him. The same way the younger brother valued. The same thing. He believed he'd earned it. He believed that all the good things he did meant that his dad would love him, forgetting the whole time that love didn't come from his effort, but from somewhere else. His father said to him, "Look, dear son, you've always stayed by me." He's like, "I know. I see your hard work. I know that. And everything I have is yours. I would give it to you regardless of your efforts. But we had to celebrate this happy day, for your brother was dead. And he's come back to life. He was lost, but now he's found." The father here again is modeling what he values. He values his son. He values his younger son despite what he did. He values his older son despite the fact that the older son believes because he's good enough, his dad will love him. Both, as a dad, both are offensive. Both are. To bring shame, to dishonor, to say, "I don't need you," that would offend me as a father. But also for my son or my daughter to grow up thinking that if they were just good enough, I'd love them, that would be offensive as well. And the father shows that he values his son, not what his son or his other son could do for him. What's fascinating about the prodigal son story is that this is where it ends. There's no conclusion. Jesus is essentially looking at the religious leaders, the self-righteous types, and saying, "Hey, what are you going to do? You can come into the party. You can celebrate when people that don't think, act, look, or believe what you believe come to terms with who they are and receive grace and mercy, or you can stay out there and have your arms crossed like this." And the crazy part, like as I'm sitting there and I'm thinking through this story, and it really hit me hard. I'm like, okay, so I understand the younger brother. I didn't get that crazy or anything like that, but I understand the younger brother. I've done things that I feel ashamed of. And I understand that going back to my dad or my mom or somebody that I've hurt and going to them is a risky thing, but I've been received with love and grace in that situation. And then I thought, like, oh, yeah, but I've also been in the situation of the older brother where I don't feel like people should get forgiveness or grace for the things that they've done. I don't feel like they should get what they have. They don't deserve the benefits of this life because if they've done the things that they've done. I get both sides. I'm wrestling. Like, what do I do with this? Like, what is Jesus trying to teach me? And then I was rereading this book by a guy named Henry Nouwen that our lead pastor blessed a couple of us with a few years ago called The Return of the Prodigal Son. And I was just taken aback because Henry Nouwen was struggling with the same thing. I identify with both. I can kind of, what's the message here? And he was interacting with this lady, and here's what she told him. She said, "Whether you are the younger son or the elder son, you have to realize that you are called to become the father." If the bottom line is that we model what we value, what are you valuing? What are you modeling? We're called to become the father. Whether we have taken this path of trying to do whatever we want whenever we want to do it, or this path of trying to please the people around us, if we just were good enough, then they'd be happy, we have to model what we value. Both of those are wrong. We got to go toward the middle, become more like the father, that no matter what happens, we value people. We model what we value. We value relationships. If you say you value relationship with your son or your daughter or your mother, your father, cousins, really, then model it. But as we said, like you could do this whole summer. You could spend time modeling what you value, the people around you, showing your wife, showing your husband, showing your friends that you value them by acting it out on a consistent basis. You could do that, and you could still miss the whole point of the prodigal son story. Because it's not just about our earthly relationships. It's about our relationship with our Heavenly Father. Many of us have a totally improper, wrong, incorrect, whatever word you want to use, view of how God views us. I love the way Tim Keller says this. He says, "The gospel is distinct from the two approaches, younger brother, older brother approaches. In its view, everyone is wrong. This approach is wrong, and that approach is wrong. You can't be bad enough that God couldn't love you, and you can't be good enough so that God will love you. Both are wrong. However, everyone is also what? Loved. The younger brother's loved, the older brother's loved. For some of you, that's very hard because you cannot imagine how God would love somebody who did all these things over here. And then others of you who are on this side are like, I can't stand the self-important, self-aggrandizing religious types who are always judging other people. God loves them as well. He does. Though both are wrong or both are loved, everyone is called to recognize this and change. All of us are. So if today you're carrying around the weight of, I've done enough, I gotta keep doing more, if I just read my Bible more, pray more, give more, not say those words, say these words, do this, do that, if you're carrying that weight because you think if you're just Christian enough, then God would love you, today you need to hear that you're wrong. That's a wrong approach. It leads to nothing. It leads to separation. That's what it leads to. But if you're also carrying the other one saying, I'm gonna do whatever I want, whenever I want, who cares about the rules, that's also wrong. It will lead to the bottom of the barrel. It's gonna lead to a bad place. Both of you are wrong. Both of you are loved, and both of you are called to change. But why should we change? What is it that we should change toward? We should see if the Father in the story represents our Heavenly Father. If the Father in the story is God and he values his Son, what does that mean about us? What does God value? He values you. You, in your mess, despite all the bad stuff you've done, despite the bad stuff you're going to do, despite the things that only you know about, that if you were just to say them out loud, people would freak out, he still loves you. He still does, despite all the good things that you do, thinking that you've earned his love. He freely gives it to you because God values you, and he models it all the time, and he especially modeled it on the cross when he decided, not deserving it, didn't earn that death. God decided he would die on a cross for us in the person of Jesus and then resurrect from the dead to show us that he values you. So today, if you are the person who feels like you've done too much, you could never, ever have this God that you've heard about love you, you're wrong. He does love you because he values you, because you are his child. And on the same token, if you're the person who feels like you've earned it, you are wrong. That is exhausting. I know how it feels. Because unlike the older brother, which we never hear about his mental state, I know this about you because I understand it because I'm there. I get it. No matter how much stuff you do outside, no matter how good it looks on the outside, you know how jacked up it is in here. And God knows too. And yet, he values you. What would happen if we actually believed this? Like if we really truly believe that God valued us, not the other people that go to church, not the people that you see that you wish you were more like, but actually you. Like if God valued me, like if I believed that, what would that change? Well, it wouldn't just change the way I feel about myself, but it would change the way I treat everybody else. It would change the way I treat everybody else. So no matter if I'm going on a family vacation with people I don't want to go with, or I'm going to a family reunion with people I don't want to see, or if there's some old friend that I need to reconnect with, but I'm nervous because I've done some things that probably I'm not proud of, or they've done some things that have hurt me, what would change if we truly believe that God valued us, and so therefore we have to value other people? What would change about our world, about your workplace, about your home, about your schools? What would change? I think everything would change. And so God, today, we humbly sit before you knowing that you have modeled over and over and over again what you value. And as hard as it is for me to understand, God, you value me. And as hard as it is for many of the people listening, you value them, God. I pray that you would make that so obvious and apparent to us today. God, if we struggle with self-righteousness, would you heal us of that, God? Would you show us how much we actually depend on you and not on our own efforts? And God, if we struggle with the selfishness where we feel like everything's about us and we need to do everything we can to make ourselves happy no matter what it does to anybody else, God, would you heal us of that and bring us back to the center, the third path, the path of trusting you? God, I pray for those of us struggling today with this that you would help us to come home. And this is what we desire, God. Help us to see it. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.